Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. The rise in greenhouse gas emissions means that the Earth's climate is already changing. How much will vary from place to place, from profound to subtle. Some locations will suffer more severe floods and storms. Other places will become drier. Some will get hotter, and some could even get colder for a time. But while there is no way to avoid some degree of climate disruption, we may be able to help ecosystems adapt. Living on Earth's Bruce Gellerman recently took a hike with four experts to learn what's being done to adapt one forest to the effects of a shifting climate.
The air is crisp, cold, and clear as John Scanlon hikes up Mount Watatic in north central Massachusetts.
Let me just get up here on the high side of the tree, being the forester in me.
Scanlon, a forestry project leader with the state's Division of Fisheries and Wildlife, is looking for signs of climate change.
Here at Mount Watatic, we have examples of some of the types of forested habitats that are likely under the emerging climate change scenarios to be disrupted or potentially even lost from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, specifically spruce fir forest, which we'll hike up to on Mount Watatic, and resident northern hardwood forest.
Massachusetts began buying up land around Mount Watatic back in the 1920s. Today it owns about 4,000 acres. Two stands of hardwood forests converge here. Among the spruce fir are beech, oak, hickory, even some black cherry. Scanlon stops next to a hemlock, takes a core sampling device from his pocket, and uses it to get an inside look at the tree's health.
Takes a while. There we go. Once the teeth bite in, we're all set.
Oh, it smells good.
Yeah, right. Oh, it's great when you're coring things like a yellow birch or black birch. They give off a real nice wintergreen smell.
This tree seems fine, but biologist Hector Galbraith, director of the Climate Change Initiative at Manomet Center for Conservation Sciences, says, look around and you will find evidence of warming here.
There are indicators which I think are showing fairly conclusively that we're already seeing the sorts of ecological changes that we would anticipate under climate change. Changes in timing of breeding and hibernation and migration schedules of organisms. I'm pretty confident that we're looking at a climate change signal already.
Joining State Forester John Scanlon and biologist Hector Galbraith and me on our hike up Mount Watatic is Mary Griffin, Massachusetts Commissioner of Fish and Wildlife. She says the department's computer models anticipate subtle but significant changes.
They're predicting that winters are going to get 1.5 to 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than they already are. So that's going to have dramatic impact on habitats and fish and wildlife species. One animal that's here at Mount Watatic in the spruce fir habitat is the snowshoe hare, and that's a species that the Union of Concerned Scientists and other biologists have predicted is likely to decline as temperatures warm.
Ecosystems are infinitely complex, and climate change models only hint at the exquisite nature of a place. So here in Massachusetts, a unique team has come together. It's a collaborative effort bringing together state officials, applied scientists, field researchers, and non-governmental organizations, leveraging their expertise and experience to find habitats affected by climate change and help them adapt. Andy Finden is director of conservation science with the state chapter of the Nature Conservancy.
Bruce, these are birch seeds.
What is it?
The seeds of birch.
Where'd you get that?
Well, there's a little birch over there, but you'll see them scattered on the snow like this. And I certainly hadn't thought of this before coming out here today, but one of the projections is that we'll get more precipitation in the winter as rain instead of snow. Now, these birches, there's about four or five species native to Massachusetts, are adapted to falling on the snow and then blowing across that crust of snow to disperse. Now, if we don't have snow on the ground, that's going to limit the dispersal. Now, birches aren't threatened, but this is just something that just came to me about the kind of subtle network of events that could be triggered by changes to our climate patterns.
The indigenous Algonquins considered Mount Watatic a sacred site, the home of a deity who guarded against misfortune. But misfortune is what happened here a week ago when an ice storm tore through the region, sweeping it to New Hampshire and beyond into Maine, snapping power lines and trees like toothpicks.
Bruce, I wanted to stop here and let me show you this here. We're approaching this extensive sugar maple stand on the north side of Mount Watatic, and you can see firsthand, we're probably some of the first people to see this, all of the obvious damage, all the tree crowns broken
that.
From the recent ice storm. It's just, that's all you're seeing is extensive damage to the crowns of these sugar maple from the recent ice storm.
Boy, the all of these trees got whacked off?
Oh, yeah. And people need to understand that when you talk about climate change, it doesn't have to be huge changes. 1 or 2 degrees change in temperature can mean what was going to be a snowstorm becomes a tremendous ice storm, giving us this kind of damage.
The ice storm was one for the books, and perhaps the specter of things to come. As temperatures rise, the cold water brook trout found around here will lose its habitat. And perhaps so, too, the Blackburnian warbler, which stops in the Watatic Forest as it migrates. They're just a few of the keystone species that call this place home, says Fish and Wildlife Commissioner Mary Griffin.
I just wanted to point out we're coming upon some deer tracks, those white-tailed deer tracks in the snow.
We've finally gotten past the deer in the headlight stage with climate change impacts. You know, what's climate change going to do to us? And we're beginning to think now about what we are going to do in response.
Climate scientist Hector Galbraith.
The state of Massachusetts has done a terrific job in preserving some of these systems. Question is, how do we continue doing that terrific job in the future under climate change? This is the adaptation question.
The time for action is now, warns Dr. Galbraith. Because we may not have as much time as we thought to adapt ecosystems for what's in store.
You know, we tend to think about climate change and habitat responses as being long, slow, linear responses. That may not be the case. There may be abrupt changes in habitats brought on by stochastic events like frequent ice storms and tree damage, like increased frequency of insect attacks, like increased frequency of fire. So what we may see in these habitats that we're looking at today are frequent step changes rather than slow, gradual changes. Here's a potential example. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but this is a possibility. Winters become warmer. The overwinter survival of tree pests, insect pests, is enhanced. Or the number of generations those insect populations can raise in a year is increased. So winters become warmer, more insects to attack the trees. Because there's more insect attack, there's more dead wood, more fire. Bingo, you may have a rapid transition from a forested habitat to something totally different.
As to add to what Hector was saying,
Forester John Scanlon.
Those type of changes that could occur with the greater survival of insect pests could have a direct impact on the hemlock woolly adelgid, which is an invasive insect species that was introduced from Japan and has killed large sections of hemlock cover in Connecticut. Was originally expected to sweep through Massachusetts, but their progress was slowed by the cooler winters. However, now that winters are warming, the adelgid is expected to cause extensive mortality of hemlock forest throughout Massachusetts.
So, you know, what, if anything, can you do about that kind of thing?
One thing the Nature Conservancy is doing, and with partnerships with the state agencies and Manamet, is to find resilient forests that are intact, have all their species, are functioning like a forest, are big, not fragmented by roads and other development. And these forests are going to be able to withstand and recover from the higher incidence of climate events, weather events, insects and diseases that Hector and John were both talking about.
But can you do that? I mean, is this like a finger in the dike? I mean, nature's force is going to be so ferocious.
The trick is to increase resilience so that when climate change comes along, the systems, the ecosystems might not be affected as much. So take away the other stressors, contaminants, so on and so forth, invasive species, maybe we can amplify the resilience of the threatened communities.
One strategy we have to try to create resilient habitats is to protect large, intact interior forests and blocks of land, like where we are today. So the state has protected over 4,000 acres of open space, and we work with partners to protect the most valuable habitats. So in protecting those habitats, like the spruce fir forest or the northern hardwoods where we are today, we're protecting places for wildlife to feed, breed, and to find resting areas, and that makes them more resilient to the stresses of climate change.
But you know, right over there is New Hampshire. If they don't do anything, or they don't do something that's going to be in support of what you're doing here in Massachusetts, could that effort just come to naught?
We're all more interrelated by a global problem like climate change. The state of Massachusetts has been working with some of our neighboring states to protect these intact corridors with other states. We recently bought a large 5,000-acre piece of property that's half in Connecticut, half in Massachusetts. Last year, we protected an 8,000-acre block with the state of Rhode Island. So we do work across state boundaries because biodiversity knows no boundaries.
Adapting the hemlocks at Mount Watatic to climate change might mean thinning the tops of trees to let more light in, or removing ground cover to help seeds take root. Cold water brook trout might benefit by tearing down dams, creating cooler streams. Learning to adapt an ecosystem to the stresses and strains of a changing climate also means adopting a new model for managing environments, says Dr. Hector Galbraith.
I think the model that we've created among ourselves is a really good model. A year ago, if we'd been having this conversation, I would have said that Massachusetts is the only place in the Union where we're doing this. But there's other points of light have started to emerge in the last 6 months. And I like to think that some of those have been influenced by the work we're doing in Massachusetts. For example, Texas, the state of Texas, is now taking very seriously adaptation to climate change. And, you know, let's be honest about this. There are some habitats we probably can't do anything about. So there are some hard decisions coming up. You know, we can all talk about here are the various things we can do, but climate change is going to have fairly serious adverse impacts on our ecosystems. And we've got to come to terms with that.
Climate disruption will make winners of some habitats and species and losers of others. Right now, Massachusetts is creating a vulnerability index to figure out which ecosystems in the state will be adversely affected in the coming years, and what, if anything, can be done to adapt them to the changing climate. For Living on Earth, I'm Bruce Gellerman.